Hi, Bad Science fans. It's Ethan. You know, we've been doing this show now for a year, and it's our anniversary today. So I just wanted to say thank you to all the fans with this little song. It's been 1 year today, and I can't believe
that we're... Hey, what are you doing in here?
Oh, sorry, Brett. I was just singing a song to the fans saying thank you.
For what?
For listening to the podcast.
What podcast?
What? Bad Science. What are you talking about? The podcast that we've been making for a year.
We canceled that show like 6 months ago.
No one told me that. I've been putting it out every Tuesday.
I thought that
and
it
getting
was,
guests in here and we, scientists. Who canceled it?
We haven't been paying you for 6 months. Have you noticed that?
No, yeah. I've been complaining about that.
I thought if you'd noticed we hadn't been the show's over.
What? You could have just told me that. You assume that because I'm not getting paid, I'm just going to stop coming in here and doing the podcast?
I came in here, I told you no more bad science, just good science from now on.
I thought you meant you wanted more factual stuff in the show.
No, the show, we're doing other shows now.
Okay, we need to have a serious talk.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to a very special episode of Bad Science. It's our 1 year anniversary episode, podversary. I should have come up with a name for that, probably.
Podversary is cool.
Okay, podversary is cool. And that voice that you're hearing was our first guest and now our one anniversary guest. It's Reggie Watts.
Hi.
How's it going, Reggie? The hilarious musical revolution that you are.
Oh, why thank you. I'm glad you read that off the card. Yes, yeah. I'm very
happy. Who
wrote
that, by the way? Did you?
I don't know. Probably okay. Humfried Berquist.
Okay. Yes. Brett, you got that? Humfried Berquist. We got to track him down. Yep. Reggie, great to see you. So glad that you're here and can't wait to talk to you about Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Copy.
And copy that, 10-4 out. And we're going to go right to our cohort today, Maggie Williams. She's a systems engineer at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And in 2013, you were a barista. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, both things are true. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about the space part of Star Wars or just the coffee portion today?
Probably the space part.
Okay, the space part.
I think that's why you brought me on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right, true. Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I forgot about true. That. Let's start with the movie, guys. Did you see this movie when it came out? Because I will tell you very quickly that I thought I saw this movie and I was like, oh yeah, I like Star Wars The Last Jedi. I remember that. And I was thinking of Force Awakens. And then about 15 minutes into watching this, I was like,
it's very different.
So you're going to have to refresh me a little bit, but I will remember.
Okay, I hope that you do. I had never seen it before. So for me, I was like so surprised and excited all of a sudden and loved it. I really had a great time with this film.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. You know what? Actually, now that I think of it, I thought it was The Last Jedi. Oh no, Return of the Jedi.
Oh, okay.
that's where I got it wrong. But I'm still going to remember. Go ahead.
Both Jedis. I mean, honestly, that's on them for putting the word Jedi in both films.
Basically the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Come
Revenge
on.
Last.
It should have been called like Red Salt or like one of the parts that was very just this
the
movie.
The blue milk, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Blue milk. I didn't know what that was. Anyways.
What did you think of the movie? Did you see it when it first came out?
Yes, I saw it opening night.
Wow.
I was pretty excited about it.
So
I walked away a little like not too happy with it, but now I'm a fan of it.
Did you have the regular issues that fans had?
Kinda. I was just upset that they killed off everything that they started in The Force Awakens, you know? Totally different director, totally different vibe.
Oh, yes, right. This is the movie that ends how? Just so I remember. This
will
help.
Luke dies at the end, fades off into the sunset.
Yeah, battles Kylo Ren via hologram that he creates,
force,
if you will.
Force
that's the force projection gram.
Oh, force projection, right. And then, the assault on the salt plane, right?
Yes,
is that right? Yeah, red salt planes going forward.
Okay, great. I'm with you. I'm back.
We're back. Mm-hmm. Okay, so wait, what else did you... Because I'm very curious about this, because there was a lot of people online, because I didn't realize after watching, I was just like, oh, this is all fun and great, I love it. But there was a lot of backlash on this film.
Yeah, well, I definitely was in the camp of wanting Rey to have, like, some sort of family backstory tie-in. And
then
in this movie, you find out she's just nobody. And so there was kind of some backlash of she should have, like, some place to belong to. But I don't think, like, the Force can come from anywhere. Like, it doesn't have to be a Skywalker.
That's true. The kid at the end also seems like
The broom.
Right, kid. Maybe a nobody. I mean, I don't know Star Wars. I don't know everything, but it looks like he's just a random kid that can move a broom, so that's cool. He's got the Force.
Broom moving. Yeah, I mean, Yeah. I don't really have a problem with that. Just because all possibilities of people's existences exist, therefore, like, why does it have to be?
Yeah.
So detailed. Some people don't know. They don't know a lot about their childhood, and that's what they spend their whole life, you know, looking for.
Mm-hmm. So true. Did anything bother you science-wise? Were there parts that you hated? There were a couple things.
Yeah. Okay. That I definitely
It wasn't perfect.
I know, right?
Documentary.
I mean, I'm okay with some of the like hyperspace, like crazy technology stuff, but there are some like basic things that they kind of got wrong.
Okay. Well, before we dive into that, we got to talk about this Mars quake. We have the first Mars quake on record.
The first suspected Mars quake.
Oh, suspected. Well, not, I mean, not we'll never confirmed.
Yeah. Well, we won't be able to confirm it since we just have one seismometer. It's the first one. So it's not like you can compare it to something else.
I see. So you're going to get a data set.
So it could be a Mars quake.
Yes, could be. Very highly suspected Mars quake.
That's exciting. What is that? Yeah. What are the implications of that?
Well, that means that our seismometer is working. So now we can, even though it was a pretty small Mars quake to begin with, we think it could, if we have a bigger one, we'll kind of be able to sense how the core is formulated, how dense it is, it's made of, which is the whole point of InSight. It's to figure out what is underneath these rocky planets that aren't like Earth. Because Earth has these tectonic plates that are always shifting, but Mars doesn't have that. So when you look inside Mars, you can tell how it was formed, how rocky planets were first formed, since it hasn't changed over time.
Whoa.
Ugh, beautiful.
That is great. Okay. Keep us updated on that. Can you explain to us, because we were talking briefly before the pod, and it was very interesting to me, so I'm glad we're here, exactly your job. What's your kind of day-to-day now that you kick into action when the lander lands? Is that correct?
Yes. So I'm a systems engineer as part of the instrument deployment system. So we have these two sensitive instruments, well, really three sensitive instruments on InSight, but they can't just land by themselves. They need all those boosters in order to land safely on Mars. So then once we land on Mars, we have a robotic arm that picks up the instruments just like a claw game, you know, like grappling things, and then it picks them up and puts them on the actual surface of Mars.
That's so cute.
And so one of my jobs was working with the robotics engineers and the instrument engineers to pick a place that they want to go and then make sure they safely get there once we landed.
Wowzers.
Yeah.
Okay. And so how long do you think it'll be till we live on Mars?
Oh, I mean, I feel like we'll be able to visit in like 10 years or so, for that plan. But permanent residence, maybe a couple of 10
years. Yeah, just a vacation home.
Yeah. Yeah. Just
stay for a
stop
few
by.
Months.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Nothing like a little bit of high doses of cosmic radiation.
I mean, people it's worth it. The risk. You're on Mars,
humans.
Man.
I know.
Yeah, you're right.
What are we talking about here?
I don't know.
Well, speaking of getting to Mars, light speed, like you mentioned, is like a big thing in this movie. Mm-hmm. So the one thing that I was going to ask about, like, because it happens pretty quick, is that ships come out of light speed and it makes this sound. It's kind of, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but it's almost like a scary sound. It's like a doom, like right when they stop.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
There's no sound.
Yeah, no.
There can't be a sound, right?
No, you'd never hear it. No.
There's just no sound.
Can't travel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even, what about if you're inside the spaceship and you're moving at light speed and then you, I don't know, all of
maybe
a sudden
you hear
stop.
Structural things.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, inside, there's probably some sort of engine that was running when you were in light speed to stop you, I guess. So there's got to be some sort of like shutdown.
Seems
noise.
Like such a vicious stop.
I know. Well, it's, yeah. I do love that. Like, I mean, it's just an exciting way of seeing like ultra speed, then just almost stasis instantaneously. Like that's like, whoa, that's a lot of power.
Yeah.
And it is.
It turns out it is a lot of power.
It is a lot of power. Yeah. I will say one thing about vacuum of space and noises and stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see the Battlestar Galactica series?
Yes, I did.
I love the detail that they had when you would see the ship. Like there was a scene where Starbuck was maneuvering a ship to drop a payload of bombs on Cylon territory, and they would flip to the pilot's point of view, and they're wearing a space helmet in the vehicle, and then you would hear the thrusters going off, and you just hear like this,
just little puffs of air,
and just like you know maneuvering it, and then when they would be firing their cans, it would be like. Just super, super low because all they're feeling is just vibration inside the headset. And I love that detail. And so the space battles were silent.
Whoa.
But interior shots of hearing the sounds and then the exteriors didn't have any sounds.
Pretty cool.
Love.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, I mean, dropping things. So, you know, in the first scene of this movie, they start out with those bombers. They kind of like come in and they're going to drop these things on another spaceship.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make any sense at all.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
No, not at all.
Everything. There's nothing that would be pulling it downward. Like there'd be a tiny amount amount of force pulling it downward, but not nearly enough to just drop things in space. Everything's just floating inertially.
That's so weird.
Yeah, so. Such an odd rule to break there.
I'm gonna watch that now just to see that part.
Oh, it's also
it's so dramatic. Totally World and it War II-esque
scene
sense.
Right there.
I know.
they're all falling.
Like, drop these bombs, and then they start dropping, and then they just float aimlessly away in opposite directions.
No! We missed!
It's like, I don't understand what's happening.
There seems to be a problem with gravity. I mean, we didn't foresee.
It's like, what is the problem?
There is none.
Yeah, that was pretty. Yeah, they had to like arm them first. They had to like turn them all on. And then, right, they just dropped them almost as if, yeah, there was going to be somebody parachuting also. Like, no attention to gravity at all.
No. Yeah. But yeah, I didn't catch it. So, I mean, I guess it's just kind of, you get wrapped up in the action.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
The actual drop happens pretty quick. I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's a serious shot. It's like, that is the shot. Mm-hmm. It's just a bunch of bombs dropping, so it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Dreadnought. At one point, he said we have to prime his dreadnought, and I just didn't know what that was, so I looked it up. Do you guys know what dreadnoughts are?
Can you please? I mean, I hear them used in science fiction often.
Okay.
As giant behemoth things.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ship.
Type of battleship introduced in the early 20th century, larger and faster than its predecessors.
Oh, so
and
it's equipped, like a real thing.
Yeah,
oh.
Entirely with large caliber guns. And then the second definition, which I thought was great, is a heavy overcoat for stormy weather.
Oh, I see. Hmm. Yeah, so it's just like kind of like the maximum heavyweight thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see.
But I don't know, it sounds like British or something, a dreadnought, to wear a dreadnought if it's like bad out.
Yeah, dreadnought. It's like, do you mind if I wear a dreadnought? Oh, yeah, so you don't have to dread anymore? Yes. Never haven't you to worry about the dread about the rain.
The dread of the rain.
The dread of the rain is now vanquished.
And then the other one that got me, which it's so funny even that I'm learning vocabulary from Star Wars.
Yeah, I love
it. But they said certain things, and I have my subtitles on, so I'm like, what the hell is that? You know, I'm just writing it down. But the other one was a rabid cur, he says. Like, he compares somebody to a rabid cur.
What is that?
C-U-R. Didn't know what that was. It's an aggressive dog or one in poor condition.
A rabid cur. A dog in poor condition.
Yeah, I think so.
It's like, what condition is it?
Poor,
I would say.
Poor.
He's not well.
He's not well.
I wouldn't take him, but you should.
Don't you think there's something between poor and well? I mean, it seems like such a huge jump.
Well, fair condition. Okay. My dog's fair condition.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so Kylo Ren in this movie takes off his talk box thing. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, so my question, and again, as a non, like, huge Star Wars guy, love Star Wars stuff, I don't know everything, why does he have that at all if he can just... Because I think, like, Darth Vader has it when his voice is all messed up or his face is all messed up.
Well, he just wants to be like Darth Vader, right?
That's his grandpa. That's got to be like, what it is.
That's the only reason?
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy to me.
I think he grew up playing Vader,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted to be Vader.
He even, like, has the mask in his closet, and he, like, talks to it.
I mean, if any of us did that now, we would just be viewed as crazy. If you show up to work and you just have a talk box thing because you think it's cool or you love Darth Vader, people are going
to
ask you about that.
They'd ask you about it, but, you know, if you really want to do it, they just have to accept you or fire you.
Yeah, or you're so powerful that you fire them, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, no one could threaten him.
Yeah, totally. If I talk like this, can you say that I'm fired? Can you truly say that? No.
Where else could I work also?
Yeah, totally.
I guess McDonald's. But that's I had a question about the speed of light. I know it's like a just theoretical thing, but it looks always like really blue. It's like shine. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a reason why it's so like neon blue almost?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, blue wouldn't really have any significance for like light speed. Like it's not really like it's not one of the ultraviolet things.
Okay, so it would just be like a blur probably. Or maybe I don't know.
That'd be really hard to calculate. Hard to calculate. But when you think about like how human eyes perceive,
mm-hmm.
and how light is affected, if a human being were able to go to the speed of light and were able to relativistically look outside and compare what they're doing to something,
mm-hmm.
or is there a phenomena that occurs if you're in a ship, like the friction? Is there friction? There's probably no friction. But whatever it is, like there's so many variables, like the way that the human eye organ perceives light, how light behaves in that state comparatively to the, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's a fantastic thing to try to figure out, but some part of your house.
Yeah. I mean, when you're traveling, the problem with light speed is that your mass would be sort of infinite. Like, there's no way you could be sort of functioning the same way that you are.
Oh, wow.
Even if you're in a capsule. I don't know.
It depends on how they're shifting the space around them to be traveling that fast. But there really wouldn't be a way that you're just, like, sitting out the window, like, looking out, seeing all this.
Go ahead, hit it. Yeah. Oh, it's so cute.
I like the way it looks.
Yeah, it looks so cool. I love going light speed.
I mean, it does look very cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it depends on the way that you're moving at that speed.
Right. Yeah, because it's all on the relativity E equals MC squared sort of relationship. So it's all like how much energy you take is related to your mass. So there really would be no way your eyes are working like that.
Okay. Wow.
Space.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about this via email. Leia basically pulls, like, this what people were upset about this too, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
Where she's kind of just floating in space. Like, she forces, quote, uses the force to get back into the spaceship. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just obvious completely. She would get so wrecked in space. Yeah. Immediately wrecked.
Quite immediate. Oh. It would be, so the first thing that'll kill you in space would be you don't have any oxygen, so she'd probably pass out after like 10 seconds or something like that. And the next thing that happens is the water like in your body starts to boil off because the pressure is so low outside.
Wow.
So that would probably, if she managed to breathe out before she went out in space, because that's kind of what divers have to do to manage the changes in pressure. Wow. So if she had breathed out, then she could have survived maybe on the order of like a minute if she was like totally in perfect condition, maybe.
That's incredible.
Would you get like extreme frostbite?
No, it actually doesn't happen. Like, you don't actually freeze as fast as like your organs would explode. Like,
I didn't know that.
It would not have been. Yeah, she just sort of gets frozen right away. Yeah, it's all about the pressure changes that happen.
Always in sci-fi, they show people freezing right away.
Yeah, but that's really not the first thing that would happen.
Wow.
Where did that start?
Space is cold, but it's not like there's no air in space to be transferring that cold into your body right away. So all the particles are moving so slow. So you would like be cold, but it's not like a cold wind or anything like brushing up on you. So
I see.
It just happens slower than that.
So if she breathes out completely and she uses this force, maybe her body would be okay.
And we don't really know how long she was out there. Like, if it really was like maybe a 15-second slowdown scene, then
it looked like slow motion. Like, it could have happened fast.
Yeah.
What are they called in, you know, the things that explain all the reason why the force works? There's a name for it. There's a technical name for these, like, little tiny, like, they're
either particles or something.
Midichlorians?
Yeah, midichlorians or something like that. And that's, people were talking about that in relationship to her being able to do that.
Oh, she has like a bunch of those?
Yeah, like, well, that's what the force, like, all works off of this I guess, an energy that's everywhere or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you add that into the dynamics or the physics of that particular reality, perhaps. Or
sure.
Biologically, like, I don't know what that would be, a crossover. But anyways, what I'm saying is that if it were some kind of a thing that could actually interact with matter or whatever, or molecules on a level that we don't necessarily understand, maybe it's just a safety system that kicks in, you know? So she's in that vacuum and a secondary, like a redundant system just comes online and then basically tries to get her to safety.
I mean, that makes total sense, because you could see Jedis get knocked around and like they fall and hit stuff and they're okay.
Yeah.
So maybe you're right in that adrenaline, you know, moment.
Yeah.
They're protected. They have like an inner shield.
I don't know. I mean, it's magical thinking, but it's fun to like. Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's what they were thinking, or maybe they just didn't. They just wrote it like, this is cool.
I mean, I will say after this conversation, it seems a lot more plausible than when I saw it.
Totally crazy.
It's not as crazy.
I mean, it would have had to be like 15 seconds.
So, okay.
Yeah. You know.
That, I can't wait for someone to simulate what would happen to a human being in space, like for a sci-fi show or something like that, where they actually took all the science super seriously.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Describe that. Email it to us.
Yes, please.
And we'll make it happen.
Oh, actually, that would be great.
Yeah. CGI experts over here.
Venmo?
Yeah, of course. That's easiest. There's a cloaked binary beacon that they're talking about.
There's always
one of those. You have a couple at home, is that correct?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can't find them.
You can't find them? Oh, man, so inconvenient. So NASA has atmospheric beacons that search for life. I read that it says we're in search of molecules that form fundamental prerequisites to life, specifically molecular nitrogen. So do you know about that? Are we looking for life? Is there anything?
Where did it say it was looking for?
I think I was in the, it was in the Mars zone here. Oh. I was looking at, because I was fascinated in the whole like water found on Mars and is there stuff there and what do they, how do they do it? And I thought, okay, that's kind of like same tech maybe.
Yeah, well, they do have a couple of different orbiters that are around Mars all the time and they're kind of looking for atmospheric changes on Mars. So you can kind of, you're not actually in the ground looking around except for Curiosity does have a little hammer and they can kind of look at rocks and see what's kind of going on, but we don't have, I mean, that's the closest thing that we have to looking for signs of life on Mars. So kind of similar.
So no air sniffers.
No. We are going to be sending that Mars helicopter on 2020 that'll kind of fly around. That's sort of a similar kind of thing.
I saw some test flight footage of it. It's pretty exciting.
Wow. I have not seen this footage.
They test it in a vacuum?
I'm not sure what have they been testing it so far.
It's got pretty thin atmosphere, right?
Yeah, they definitely need to test it for more of a Mars-like environment. Because the gravity will be different there and everything like that. So
okay, that sounds really cool. And that's next year they're launching this.
Yeah, 2020.
Wow.
As the name says.
So lucky.
Oh yeah. okay. Yeah, totally. I thought it was very funny that the bridge where all the leadership was got destroyed like so easily. You know,
where
Leia was standing.
Yeah, Leia's there, and then I think Admiral Akbar is there.
Of course,
somebody else.
Yes. It's a trap.
And like,
no, it's no, actually
this is
for
just
it is
regular. Yeah,
just a regular battle. We all knew it was coming.
Yeah,
I mean they kind of did, and it was kind of early in the battle from what I remember, and they just got, you know, it seemed like there was no extra defense for like the main cockpit where they all are.
Oh yeah, the command center.
Right. So I thought that was kind of like maybe silly design, and I wanted to just ask if spacecraft are designed with that in mind, like having the most protected area where the people are.
Yeah, no, not particularly. I mean, in space, there wouldn't really be a lot to look at most of the time. You probably wouldn't need like all your important people sitting like right at the front with a big window there. Like you'd want to be hiding away in the control room or something.
Yes.
Like, not necessarily seeing everything because you mostly rely on your sensors out there, not like your eyes.
Yeah, right.
Good call.
That's interesting. Well, and also if for some reason, because of light speed, maybe because they get to go to worlds so quickly, you know, so that they do have light, you know, contrast, like light coming off of a planet and they can see, you know, maybe there's a, you know, the culture spawns it from the technology. However, even in that instance, you would still take your command center, your nerve center, and you would protect it to all hell, like after shields fail and like structurally it's
put
able
down
to withstand
the extra shield
a lot
or whatever.
Yeah, because you still need to issue commands, so why would you, you know, I mean, in destroyers, naval destroyers, I guess the command deck is it's pretty high.
Okay,
it's pretty high, but I imagine that there are a lot of defenses around it.
I would hope so,
because that's just like your brain, that's the brain. And
well, I mean, if I could design the body, I'd put the brain where the heart is.
Yes. There you go. Thank you.
Right?
That's the hardest part.
Yeah. The hardest part. Mm-hmm. And also, I would put them next to each other because, you know, that's the safest spot. Your little cave of emergency items.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So think about that when you guys are designing people for Mars or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, and I'll think about it just for fun.
Yeah, and you can just think about it on your own. If you're eating or something, you want something to think about.
Yeah, yeah, I got it.
Let's go for it. Maybe you're going for a walk. You forgot your headphones.
Yes. Okay. Yep.
They always say in this film, and I think other Star Wars films too, they talk about the galaxy. They're always saying, like, you're protector of the galaxy, or you're the best in the galaxy, stuff like that. And does that mean that there in this universe is one galaxy? Because we have a ton of galaxies, right?
Oh, well, just say a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
So it does limit it to one singular galaxy far away.
Yes, yeah. Can't forget.
Well, distances between galaxies are pretty vast.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it would make sense if you had light travel, then a galaxy is more manageable.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Don't need to worry about those other galaxies.
Nah, okay. It's too much.
I like that. That makes sense. I think Benicio del Toro was great. I just wanted to say that. I didn't know he was in this
collector?
Movie. He was like the thief.
The master.
He was in. They met him in jail.
Codebreaker.
Yes, master codebreaker.
Yeah.
That's right.
I love how he's playing these hyper characters now. Like he's, you know, he's the collector.
Yeah.
In the Marvel universe, and then now he's like this codebreaker guy.
Master codebreaker.
I love it.
Yeah, I thought that was great, and just totally surprised me. I didn't know what was going on for a second there. I have a very weird game. If you'd like to play it.
Okay.
It's based on Yoda's quotes. And I was reading some of these Yoda quotes, and I thought, oh, you know what? These kind of sound like broken taglines for companies or like slogans or jingles or something. So I wanted Maggie and I to read like the last line of a typical commercial, which I have written down for us. And then I wanted Reggie to sing us the jingle, which is which is Yoda's quote.
Yoda's quote.
So just, you know,
Yoda's
whatever.
Well, which quote?
Yoda's quote.
Yoda's quote right here.
Okay, so I'll do the first one to exemplify, yes?
Sounds good.
Okay. And that's why shopping for sneaks is a fancy, fancy treat at TJ Maxx.
Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
DJ Maxx. Great. Okay, so that's one. So here, read the second one.
All right. So come on, you dork. Make a splash this summer with Super Soaker Extreme.
Train yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose.
Great, great. Here at the new Blockbuster Video, late fees are double.
Always pass on what you've learned. Blockbuster.
Oh, yeah, okay, there it is.
Because every day at IKEA, it's free corn dog day for kids.
Many of the truth that we cling to depend on our point of view. IKEA.
IKEA. beep, beep, beep. All week long with the new 2019 Jeep Wrangler.
Do or do not. There is no try, Jeep.
All right. Bernie Sanders needs your help, so stand side by side with us and let's really break some breadsticks together from your friends at Olive Garden. When you're here, you can't be anywhere else because you're already here.
Difficult to see, always in motion is the future.
Wow, great, great. Oh. Snaps there for the artistic reading we just experienced.
That's good. I'm glad we figured that out. That's for sure.
Okay, so we are going to take a quick break now and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
And we're back.
Here on Bad Science for the second half of The Last Jedi, the one-year podversary of Bad Science. It's a title previously mentioned.
Title previously mentioned. But
also, Reggie was just like basically raving with a big glass bottle. You look like you were having a lot of fun there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, once in a while, you got to raise it.
You got to raise the bottle?
You got to raise the bottle towards the roof.
Okay, that's so fantastic. And that's your, just, you live by that? Or
it's just me.
You've always said that.
Just me, yeah.
So you don't recommend other people. That's just you.
Just me.
For you.
Yep.
Okay, so we mentioned holograms a little bit earlier. I wanted to know if that, like, stung you guys as, like, weird that they, because I had never seen a Jedi do this before. But at the end of the movie, Luke battles Kylo Ren. And then it turns out he's not actually battling Kylo
he's
Ren.
Been a hologram the whole time.
Yeah, the lightsaber goes right through him, and it's like, oh, tricks on you. I have been projecting myself with the Force from this other planet.
Well, I did like the part where they had all the different people and all the Imperial troops like shoot at him, like all at the same time for like a minute. It was like crazy, and he still survived. I don't know how that wasn't like a dead giveaway immediately.
Yeah, he should have at least been curious. Like wait a minute, maybe I should fight him.
And I was like, yeah, maybe we should just, I don't know, we should reconsider some stuff. Let's take some time and let's figure this out.
Let's interview him or something.
Because that's a lot of energy. I didn't want to calculate how much energy we just concentrated in that area, but it just seems highly.
Many would say it's a waste. It looks like a big waste of bullets.
It was a lot of sort of energy pulses.
So yeah, I found that like kind of, I don't know, just it should have been in another movie maybe because I just didn't know that was possible at all.
Well, they do have to bring in some new things some of the time. It didn't really bother me too much.
Okay, great.
It didn't bother me. I mean, it was definitely, I mean, it was cool. It was cool to be like, oh, whoa, he wasn't there. You know, there's that.
But then
like,
how could he actually, hold a lightsaber and be, like, wearing clothes and stuff?
Well, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, he also
looks different, too. He's, like, a totally different, like, it's not totally him projecting. He looks kind of younger and, like,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, and also everybody could see him, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if he's projecting, like, let's say he's using the mitochondrial what is it? What's it?
Mitochondrial lyrial.
Lando Calrissian.
Metachlorians.
Metachlorians.
Yeah.
Never metachlorian, I didn't like.
And we'll be right back.
Skippy peanut butters.
Never mind. Never mitochlorian, I didn't like. Skippy peanut butter.
Yep, that's future advertising. Okay. Dissociative advertising. Get used to it. Yes, so the fact that he was projecting means that if you're using that kind of, again, like the force, and there's this whatever ebbing, ever-present force made of these tiny things. So that means that he would have had to, he would either manifest somehow, use light in a way, like he's able to form light or bend light or reflect light.
Right, right.
You know, like create essentially
like a prism.
Like a prism, yeah, or just like he's disrupting the light flow and it's bouncing back at the various wavelengths to create color and texture and it looks like him. So he's either doing that or he's able to get into their minds and their perception is then seeing this.
That would make more sense in the Star Wars realm to me.
I think
but
so.
Then also why show everybody at the same time, and I just don't understand still how he's able to physically interact with stuff.
Was he like, were there sparks and stuff?
I don't think so, because the whole thing, how you knew he wasn't there, was he didn't create the sand dust, like the red sand on the ground. He did not move that at all.
Did he have the dice or like give Leia
dice?
He
did, but they disappeared afterwards.
Okay.
But they weren't like with him, so that is kind of weird. They disappeared like a few minutes later.
But then how does he fight with the lightsaber too?
Well, I don't think he ever actually interacts with anything. I think he's just like kind of prancing around. I don't think there's a moment where they actually hit the two lightsabers together.
That's good.
Like the
interesting. That'll give them extra points for that.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that's a good detail. I want to see that scene now. I'm so excited about that. Yeah.
Show it. Just run it.
Dun, 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 dun.
We take a 60-minute
no.
break.
What?
Fire again!
Fire!
That was basically that scene.
No, that was pretty much it.
Good summary.
That's kind of summarized as Star Wars, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't even need, there was no dialogue necessary.
It's all Star Wars. A
bunch of sound effects. Okay, so I wanted to talk about the Cassini. Do you know about the Cassini?
Oh, a little bit. Yeah, their grand finale that they had.
What's their grand finale? Tell me.
Well, they did already have the grand finale.
Oh, okay.
They were around Saturn for many, many years, and they finally had sort of reached the end where they didn't have a lot of fuel to keep their current orbit. So they sort of dipped deeper and deeper down closer to the atmosphere and then finally just crashed the whole thing. Not really crashed, but sort of skimmed the atmosphere
or did it bounce off the rocks.
No, it just kind of descended slowly and slowly until more and more friction grew and then they just stopped hearing from it.
It just burned out.
An elegant,
that's
end
gorgeous.
Of a mission. Yeah.
Like they picked the shallowest glide path, like
I think because they wanted to still hear from it
they
as well they were going.
Alive as possible. Yeah, yeah. Like this is the shallowest angle we can hit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing that happened in this movie, that they're like low on fuel, which I thought was so funny. They harped on it a bunch of times, that they're like just following them for a lot of the movie. Like the huge ship is like, we can't catch up to it because the little ship's a little bit smaller and it's going faster than us.
Yeah, I don't know how that really makes sense because, I mean, if they're already both moving, then like they're already like in space, so they're just going to keep going the same speed that they always were.
Right.
So if they can't catch up with them at their current speed, they never will. Because they don't need fuel to keep on their current speed.
Mm. Yeah, so. that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, unless the smaller ship can... Would the mass matter? Like, I guess it's energy and
mass. I mean,
that's
only for acceleration, though.
Right?
Once they're already at their speeds that they are, then they just need...
But can the ship accelerate more
They
quickly?
Should be. Well, not... I mean, yeah, with the
and
same force, the smaller
accelerate.
Ship will be able to accelerate faster.
Right, because
so,
of less
yeah.
mass.
So
right?
eventually the bigger ship, should be able to use force to speed up... to match their speed.
I see.
So maybe it was just a matter of time, but they made it seem like this urgent thing of like, oh, when we run out of fuel, it's all going to be over.
Right, exactly. Like,
when will we catch up to them? In 6 months. We'll get them, though.
We'll get them. By then, we'll figure it out.
Definitely. We'll have had lots of coffees, many breakfasts.
Which reminds me, where's my coffee? I'm tired. I just thought that was, I wanted like a better reason, I guess, for them not being able to catch them, or maybe they lost them and then caught back up somehow, but there were so many shots of like the bigger ship's behind the smaller ship and they can't catch up, and I thought maybe...
Yeah, maybe if they're both accelerating, then like they would need that fuel to keep going, keep staying faster than them.
But
you gotta assume that's
what they're doing.
I mean, it's partially credible. It's credible, it's just weird.
Yeah. Just the way they phrase it.
A little weird. I mean, it's a plot point, right?
And then what, like, fuel source wise, because we're talking about fuel.
Yeah,
like,
what do they use?
Right.
What were they using?
That crystal? Not sure.
What were they mining? Remember that?
In the
standalone, Rogue One.
Remember that they worked on that mine
that mined the energy required for starships.
Mm-hmm. Fueltonium.
Yes, fueltonium.
Yeah.
Hey, exactly. I'm fueltonium. Hey, what do you need?
Fueltonium.
Get unleaded. I got hydrogen. I've got.
Hey, don't tell anybody I'm here. But if you need fuel,
I got thorium reactors. Whatever you need, I got it.
I need hundreds of guys to move it though.
Yeah. So maybe you don't got it.
I don't know. Do we have like self-replenishing? Like, wouldn't you want some sort of like nuclear something or other to fuel it?
Yeah, probably. I'm not really sure. I think they have some sort of mineral that they use in the made-up Star Wars universe. But okay. For us in real life, really the thing that would help us better would be to be able to transfer our water into more of a regenerable fuel source.
Okay.
Because a lot of the sources that we use right now are limited. So you can only take... I mean, you can only use what you take with you. So
right.
That's a pretty major point for getting to Mars eventually, is how are we going to have enough, how are we going to carry enough fuel to get ourselves there and back?
So we still don't have a way of making fuel on the International Space Station or on the moon or on Mars?
I mean, we have ways we can do it. It's just not really being implemented on large enough scale to support what we're doing, because we do have resupplies that go up to the ISS and give everything that we need up there. I'm actually not sure if they do some regenerative energy on the ISS, but they do need to resupply a lot of their supplies, so it's definitely not a self-sustaining station at all.
Okay, very interesting.
So the solar cells are just for, like, basic systems or something like that?
Yeah, for all the power for the computers and everything, the life support systems.
Oh, wow. That's what the solar cells are for.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Yeah, because you do need power for that, but that doesn't necessarily transfer into, like, energy to maintain their orbit.
Right. That's propulsive, energy. Mm-hmm. Wow. Interesting.
So what would we need, or what do we have up there that kind of does that? Do you know?
It's been a little while since I took the class. I did take a class on space habitation, and now it's not all coming back to me.
I mean, could you go take that class right now, and
we'll pull out my notes.
I mean,
we'll just edit it.
We'll edit it together, and everything's online too. So like, you can probably just do it on your phone.
We'll wait.
We're patient.
JPL's like, where are you? I did a podcast.
Back to school.
Yeah, back to school.
I remember something.
It started with a podcast. Are like, we don't like how this is starting.
A podcast sent me on a journey. I need paid leave.
Self reflective.
Yeah, totally. We need you at JPL. There are critical things that need to get solved.
There's a reason we hired you.
Totally. Okay.
All right. I was reading a little bit about dust devils on Mars, that we have them here and that they occur on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about these dust devils? Can you tell me about these dust devils?
A little bit. So we do take a lot of images on InSight, just trying to capture a dust devil, sort of as a little like burst of wind or something that you would actually be able to see, because we have two cameras on InSight, and one is stable on the lander, so it can always take pictures. You can kind of flash them together and see how the landscape has changed over time, which it hasn't really, so that's good.
So it's just a static shot.
Yeah, that keeps it there. And then we have one on the arm, and so that one you can kind of flail around wherever you want to point it, so you can kind of capture like sunrise images, or we got really close to the instruments to make sure that they look okay. Nice. And then you can also take sort of stereo pairs. If you move the arm, you can estimate the location of like rocks and the instruments. Those cameras have a lot of use to like see what's going on besides just dust devils, but the scientists are always excited to take dust devil images and see if they can catch one in the act.
Is it like dangerous at all? Do you think they could destroy some of your
equipment? Really, the wind, we do have on the seismometer a wind and thermal shield, so it's sort of like a hat that sits on top of the seismometer to protect it. So the wind could have an effect on our measurements, but it's not presenting any danger to the lander itself.
Okay.
How do the lenses stay clean?
That's a tricky one. They don't designed? Really stay clean.
Yeah,
so when we landed, they had covers on them.
Yeah.
And when we actuated that, we had fringe bolts that actuated to release the covers. Okay. But the context camera that's pretty close to the ground, and it still had quite a bit of dust on it after we opened the cover.
Yeah.
So they're not sure if some dust was on the top of the cover and fell down onto it, or some got underneath it on landing.
Oh, crazy.
Because we haven't really had one in this particular spot on landing before. So as like right. As all the engines are powering up when you land, you could just blow out some dust right in the middle of it.
Right.
But the other camera on the arm is really clean. So it's gotten a couple specs on it since we pointed it straight up at the sky, and there was sort of more of a windstorm earlier on in the mission, and so there is a little bit more dust floating around. But
Think about installing an eyelash?
People online have been saying that, but I mean, it's a very complicated mechanism. And we don't have anything to clean off the solar panels either, and those are just collecting dust over time also.
Whoa.
That'd be interesting if you created a camera that was a sphere, you know, so it's inside. So the lens is actually just the sphere, and so it just rotates. As it rotates, it cleans, and it shows the new part, something like that.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Draw up a blueprint? Should we?
Yeah, if you could create a spherical lens, that would be interesting because the camera would stay in place, but the lens would rotate around it. It's the same lens, so you essentially could just change.
I'm surprised there isn't one
either
of those
clean
like
or change.
Just automatic, like you're saying, windshield wipers or some sort of just goes around, cleans everything.
Yeah,
that seems to make sense.
Okay,
I mean,
put it
I love
in
your 360.
Thing,
I love thinking about that stuff because it's just I love figuring out solutions to that.
Yeah, they could fly up just a whole car wash, basically, and then just run equipment through that.
I think you're going a little bit bigger.
What?
A little bit big.
A little bit big. It's Mars.
Yeah,
you know how much room there is, Reg?
Yeah, I know.
It's just so much room.
Yeah.
You can put whatever you want.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Let's do it.
Right?
Yeah. Let's scrap the 2020 mission and we'll put that in its place.
If we have to.
Yeah.
If we have to scrap it, I think that's the move.
Yeah. It would be a rover wash.
Yeah, it would be a rover.
Well, what about the lander? You'd have to move the wash over the lander.
Yeah, the washer has to be mobile.
Yeah.
Okay, so it'll look like one of those Java sand crawlers. It's like,
yes.
It just goes over the thing. It's like, grease, oil. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, and you can put cameras on it and it can explore stuff. It can be multi-purpose. Oh, no. Just the wash. There's different, we send up different missions for one purpose only. I mean, honestly, at that point, let's just send up a robotics factory.
Yeah, that's true.
Send up a thing that makes these.
Or toys.
We don't want to be bored when we get there. There's nothing there.
Yeah, you're right.
Send up some ping pong supplies.
Yeah, whatever needed.
Okay, great. So I did some research on things that hover. Do you know about hovercrafts that we currently have?
Mm-hmm.
You do?
The skirt of air, the air skirt?
I don't know.
Magnetic things that kind of float you? Is that
like maglev?
I feel bad because I brought it up and I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Oh,
but these all sound great.
Okay, do you tell us what do you have there?
I don't know.
What do you have on that?
Again, very minimal. Okay. There's a thing called Hover Surf that is going to be around this month, May or June of 2019.
Hover Surf.
That you can buy. I don't know. It looks crazy. That's the name of the company, Hover Surf.
Well, there's that French dude that he was a. He was like a daredevil or some kind of a extreme sports person or whatever, and he developed the flight suit.
Okay.
It looks like you stand on it, and there's a remote control, and it's like the Green Goblin, essentially.
Oh, my God.
So it's a control where he just stands on this deck, and then he hits this button, and then these jets propel him into the air, and he's able to surf in the air
with a
helmet. And he can get pretty high, and he's doing these crazy maneuvers, and then just lands right back again. And he also is the guy who created the water jets, where people can fly out of the water.
Same guy created both?
And do those things. Yeah, same guy.
This guy's just upset with jetpacks, and I love it.
Yeah, but that I don't know if it's something like that. Like if it's rocket based.
Well, I think some of these they look more like kind of big drones or like a bike, like a one seater that's also a drone looking thing.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, one of them is really cool. They use it, I think, in Israel. Like for the army uses it, and it's like a little helicopter. It's one third the size of a helicopter. It's called a Cormorant.
And I've seen that.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It goes really fast. I think it can go up to 150 miles per hour, and it can go where other helicopters can't go. It can go in tiny areas.
Interesting.
It's like the blades are built into the body, and so it just channels right through the body, and there's a spoiler on the back.
Yes.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, it's really cool, and they were trying to make it into a troop transport, but it is very Star Wars.
It looks, yeah. Yes, that's what I was going to say also. Super Star Wars inspired, I think.
Yeah.
So check that out, Cormorant. And Cormorant. And definitely this one, French guy's name, I don't know his name, but
yeah,
that,
I'll
that
find
video
out.
Was crazy.
There's two guys. There's one guy that has hand-mounted ones. He has hand-mounted ones like kind of like Iron Man.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, but it's kind of weird looking because it's all like forearm and you have like these weird shields on your forearm and whoa. Structured and you're kind of like, I think the throttle's inside and the jets are on either side of your of each hand.
Whoa.
And so you're using that to kind of like using your body.
You still have to use your body.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
Straight.
Yeah, over. It's cool. But I like awesome. The one where you're standing looks cooler. Yeah. It just looks more. And they could actually use it for Green Goblin. Like if they're ever going to bring Green Goblin,
that's
just
great.
Seriously, practical do like just thing. Dress it up to look like the Green Goblin's thing. But it looks exactly like that. It's insane.
Another probably inspired like real thing from science fiction.
Green Goblin for sure.
You know,
Green Gobbles.
Green Gobbles for
gobble,
sure.
Gobble, gobble.
And then there's. That's their tagline for some reason. There's a thing called Kitty Hawk, which is a one-seater seaplane drone thing, which you can pre-order. So if you're if you have a bunch of money to burn, you can get this Kitty Hawk. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you can travel just by yourself. I think by sea.
And that hovers?
And it's a hovercraft.
Okay. Ooh. Hovercraft. Yeah, there's also the motorcycle dude. He's got like the twin blades. And you sit in the middle of it, and they've been testing it on salt flats and stuff like that. But they, there's so many amazing hover vehicles that are being made from like all different angles, like gigantic drone concepts to you know electric planes, electric hydrogen planes. Anyways, it's really exciting time for personal to I don't know to innovative alternative fuel source flight. It's amazing.
Yes, tiny flight. Do you have, I just assume like in your backyard at JPL, you just have a bunch of these things. You don't have to tell if it's a secret, but do you guys like hover around or you?
I mean, there's definitely a lot of people working on like automated, more like automated helicopter stuff. They're more, JPL does a lot of the robotics and sort of automate, like how do you orchestrate a bunch of different helicopters like flying around each other?
Yeah.
That's a lot of their focus area. So,
whoa.
Okay. So there are sometimes you walk into the office and there's like stuff flying around. Like, oh, another normal day.
Yeah, whatever.
That's so crazy. The future. Just the future constantly.
And I would ask the same question about like rovers and stuff because I know you've been to JPL. I have not been there yet. Mm. But do they have just like test, you know, prototypes of something?
Yeah, well, they have the Mars Yard that has sort of the replicas of the Curiosity rover and a couple different, like they have one that's just a scarecrow, so it's just like the wheels of it, so they can kind of like drive it around on rocks and crazy stuff and not have to worry about all the hardware getting hurt.
Cool.
Yeah. And it is outside, so it kind of like they have to cover it up when it rains and things like that. It's like very interesting. And then InSight has a test bed also that's inside in a sandbox, we call it, so we can test out all of our flight sequences before we run them on Mars. We always run them through our test bed so that we can make sure all the commands work as we think that they will.
Okay.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing.
What, do you have a favorite spacecraft, real or Star Wars, whatever you want?
Well, before I came to JPL, I worked on Kepler, the mission that found exoplanets, it's done now, but that was one of my first spacecraft that I got to command, so that was like, it's really cool, and also a lot of people know about it. It's pretty high profile since it discovered so many different exoplanets. Yeah. It's sort of like the pathfinder for all these different missions. So.
That's so cool. You're a spacecraft commander.
I know, yeah.
That's so dope.
It sounds more exciting than it kind of is on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah,
it's just like hitting like enter, but
it's like
the knowledge behind
is
it.
Is this the command? Yeah. Okay. Man, is it doing it? Now we have to wait.
Yeah, and then you wait 20 minutes. Yeah. See if it worked. Yeah.
Did it work? I think it did. So if you just sped it up, like by like 80%, it would just be like a high stakes drama.
Yeah.
It's just orienting itself and doing all the things. Like, oh my gosh. It's just like playing video games.
Yeah.
That's incredible. What an incredible achievement.
Okay. I mean, I think we've. Oh, I also wanted to just say that I cried. At one point in this movie, when Rose kisses Finn, I thought that was, I don't know what happened to me, but I started crying a little
bit. When Rose kisses Finn.
After she pushes him out of the way to, like, out of the blaster thing.
She basically, it looks like she's going to die right there. Mm-hmm. I think that's why I started crying, because I think like, oh, we lost her. Mm-hmm. And I just loved her character and thought she was so fantastic.
Yeah.
And it just made me so sad. But she was okay. So yeah. That's nice.
Oh, that's sweet. I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
I need to rewatch this movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. Honestly, I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I really thought it was great.
I like when Yoda comes back and he like gives Luke a little pep talk.
It's a great moment.
He burns down the whole Jedi library.
Yeah.
Like, pretty cool.
Yeah. Very cool. I love that.
Ah, Yoda.
Okay, well, before we go, we do like a little plug section here, Maggie. So do you have something you want to tell people about, something they should look out for?
Oh, yeah. Check out the InSight website. I think it's, if you Google InSight JPL spacecraft, you should get to it. I think it's like .mars.gov or something like that. Anyway, you'll get all the updates there. So we'll see if we get more confirmed Mars quakes, or if we can confirm any that we've already had, because they'll be sort of, you see these signals and people are assessing, but it's the first time we're ever seeing these signals on Mars, so all the scientists will be carefully looking at this data to see, is this actually a Mars quake? What can we learn from it? And hopefully soon we'll be able to be publishing some papers and being talked about what's inside Mars.
Beautiful.
Yes.
The Reg Man.
So happy to hear that. well, nothing that groovy, but what is happening? Well, I'm just making a bunch of dumb videos.
Okay, great.
And some music projects. I'm just basically running tons of experiments on like production processes, just to create a faster flow through, like minimal resistance and maximal results.
Great.
But also super hyper maxi fun.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I'm doing. I guess, I don't know, I'm doing some festivals. I'm doing the festival in Taos. I forget the name of it. Oh, ley line? No, it's some
ladle.
No, Vortex. Vortex Festival. Yeah, I'm doing the Vortex Festival. I don't know when this is coming out. Probably come out 2 years.
It'll come out 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, well, we're going to release the 1 year anniversary out of 3rd year anniversary.
Okay. So I'll be playing Coachella 2020. And no, that's it.
That's okay, it. Great. I thank you guys so much for joining me. I had a great time. Learned a lot. figured this might be one of my favorite Star Wars movies, guys. I'm going to just go out there and say it.
I agree. Andre Agassi. Agree.
Andre Agassi. Agree. All right. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our social media producers are Kate Baker and EJ Gullett. And our X-Wing producer is Brett Kushner. Follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show. That's at Bad Science Show. For pictures of our guests and much more, send us an email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. And I just wanted to say thank you so much. This year of making the podcast has been super fun. I look forward to the next year of it. I hope you guys keep listening and keep writing in. It really means a lot to hear how much you guys are enjoying the podcast. So I'll see you next week, where we will be talking about the Avengers. See you then. And until then, happy 1 year anniversary to all of you. Feel free to buy yourself a gift, or your loved one a gift, or your friend that listens to the show, and really, really go overboard. You know, get them something unnecessarily great and expensive, and I'll see you next week. Goodbye.